Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Let the record reflect the time is, what time is it? 3:38 p.m. Monday, March 27, 2006. Members present, Representative Crawford, Lynn, Cott, Guttner, Rokeberg, and myself, Chairman Anderson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Today's schedule, Senate Bill 255, Optometry, Extend Board and License Endorsement, and Senate Bill 273, Motor Vehicle Sales, Senator Cowdery's bill. First, we have Senate Bill 255, Optometry Extension Board Licensing Endorsement. And who is here for that one? Oh, hey, Tom, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tom Maher, staff to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. With me today is Pat Davidson, our legislative auditor. On the behalf of the committee and Senator Chair, I thank you and your members for hearing Senate Bill 255, Finance, related to the termination date and duties of the Board of Examiners and Optometry, amending the licensing endorsement and renewal provisions for optometrists and providing for effective date. It looks like there's a lot in this bill. The bill consists of recommendations made by the auditor and housekeeping recommendations supported by the department and the board, and I'll go through those very quickly individually, but when you first look at the bill, it looks like there's quite a bit in there. The bill consists of Section 1, which is the extension, extends the sunset date of the Board of Examiners from June 30th, 2006 to June 30th, 2014, per the audit conclusions contained in the report before you on page 5. Legislative audit concluded the Board of Examiners and Optometry continues to serve a public need and is operating in the public interest. The regulation and licensing of qualified optometrists is necessary to protect the public's health, safety, and welfare. Further, the Board of Examiners in Optometry has operated effectively, adopted regulatory changes, and supported legislation that improved its oversight process and promoted more effective regulation of licensed optometrists. Accordingly, SB 55 provides for an 8-year sunset. Sections 5, 6, 9, 10, and 11 incorporate a recommendation by the legislative auditor to the legislature concerning a problem on licensing. The auditor recommended the legislature amend optometry statutes to ensure they support the current license endorsements for the diagnostic use of pharmaceutical agents. Currently, statutory language provides for a single endorsement for both prescribe and use. However, the Board of Examiners and Optometry is actually issuing two types of endorsements. The first allows a practitioner to both prescribe and use pharmaceutical agents, and the second type of endorsement allows a practitioner use only. Current law does not authorize the use-only endorsement. The bill before you corrects this situation by adding the sections I mentioned, authorizing a use-only endorsement, and also in Section 11, grandfathers in the practitioners that were given that endorsement over the years, which is since 1992. So this legislation changes the current law to make practices legal. It grandfathers license holders in and make sure we don't leave any practitioners out, which could have an impact on the number of providers serving the public, and hopefully will maximize the number of practitioners that can practice in Alaska. Finally, the rest of this legislation contains housekeeping recommendations that were approved by the board and supported by the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development. These housekeeping amendments clean up old language and allow the board to better protect the public. Section 2 deletes the word president, as the board actually has a chair. Sections 3 and 4 deal with allowing the board to better protect the public by improving the handling of disciplinary actions. Section 7 deletes the statutory site requiring 24 hours of continuing education instruction, which allows the board to establish through regulation the number of hours without amending statutes. This amendment was requested by the board in its response to the audit, and this now makes them similar to other boards. Section 8 removes branch office reference, as branch offices no longer exist. And finally, there is one fiscal note from occupational licensing, and as you're aware, Mr. Chairman, the passage of this legislation will incur no additional costs beyond those already contained in the fiscal year 07 budget in the governor's request. The board is self-supporting through member fees. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's the presentation of the bill, and Pat and me are both here for questions.
Thanks, Tom. I'll begin with questions. One, on page 1, line 6, the extension date, specifically 2014, we always run into this debate, Pat knows, that over the last few years where there's, or maybe not debate, but concern, should a board or commission be extended that far out, or should there be scrutiny earlier, 4 years, 6 years? Mm-hmm. In this case, this is 8 years. Mm-hmm. What's the norm? And maybe Pat's the better one to ask, but either you have such
a Pat can join me if
yeah,
you mind.
Thanks, Pat.
But as you remember, Mr. Chairman, last year we changed the statutory maximum to 8 years from four. It was four. And Pat can talk a little bit more about the time span, I think.
Sure. And thanks, Pat. Just if, before you introduce yourself, just again, the idea of eight. I know you prefer the longer just because there's we always have an ability to call a board or commission before us. Our scrutiny is so open. I mean, we almost have too much power, I think, sometimes where I don't think there's a problem if it were to 8 years. But conversely, I know that in terms of consumer protection and patient protection, there's a mindset of, wait a minute, almost a decade's too long. Let's do it every 4 years. And I don't remember the history. So,
For the record, Pat Davidson representing Legislative Audit. The theory behind the bill that passed last session was the idea that most of the boards and commissions, particularly those that are occupational in nature, have gone through the sunset process so often that most of the issues now are matters of efficiency of board activities, and to a lesser degree, actual continuation of the board,
okay.
Which is what the sunset process
okay.
is about.
Thank you for that reminder. And then secondly, I'm the guy who sponsored the ophthalmology bill. I know that it wasn't you. Representative Thomas sponsored the optometry bill. I say that broadly in the sense of there's been some conversation on that and some disagreement on powers and duties. That being said, specifically of optometrists, that being said, just one quick reiteration. On page 4, the last page, line 10, we're not granting new authority to optometrists in terms of prescriptive rights. This is just the same topical ability they've always been able to do, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. We're not changing what they're allowed to do. When the statute changed in 92, the phrase prescribe and use was added. And what the board did, because not all practitioners at the time had the education that supported the prescribe as well as the use. And that's what we see now is we have some practitioners who, for whatever reason, still prefer just to keep with the use. And in discussions with the board, they're interested in moving the profession ahead where everybody can both prescribe and use. But what we're seeing is that a professional is going to have probably a 25 to 35 year career. And while that's where the board is looking to take the profession, to limit it to just prescribe and use, you're going to eliminate a certain segment of practitioners. And it's typically better in the public interest to have more practitioners rather than less.
And I appreciate that response. Last question, then we'll get to other committee members' questions. You have a retroactivity, one of the longest I've seen, back 14 years back to 1992. And it's on sections 5, 6, 9, and 10. And 5 and 6 I'm okay with. 9 and 10 are what you just described, correct?
Okay, yes, Mr. Chairman.
I'm good with that. And then it's effective immediately should the bill pass. So are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, can I have a motion to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Pat, how often do you do the audits on this particular area?
Through the chairman, Representative Cott, the prior standard was 4 years. And sometime we push those dates out a little bit. So they typically ran 4 to 6 years. Most of these boards have been in existence, depending upon which board they are, for 20-plus years. And so on average, we probably looked at the optometrists, you know, I don't know, 10 times, you know, 5 to 10 times.
So it's fair to say then you won't be reviewing this board for another minimum of 4 years?
Through the chair, Representative Cott, with the extension date to 2014, that would be our next scheduled review of this board. However, through the Budget and Audit Committee, any legislator can request a look at any board or any state activity in general.
And Matt, do you agree with the response from Mr. Urien regarding the lowering of the fees. That was one of your recommendations, and so maybe it's too premature.
Through the chair, Representative Cott, the fees are always controversial. If the boards and commissions are sort of in a hole, in a deficit, they want to take 4 to 6 years to come out of that hole and have a gentler rise. What we see right now is when we look at the fees, the expenses for a board are generally consistent, except for when it comes to investigations, and they're a wild card in anybody's budget. And some of the boards we've seen like to have a little financial cushion so that if they get hit with a significant investigation or one that goes to the hearing officer, they've got the money to cover it. But when we looked at this board, they recently increased their fees, and they hadn't been running the deficit. So when we take a look at it, we're recommending the fees go down. However, it will be the last time we looked at it was 05, and they're talking about they'll look at it again in the next renewal period, which is 2 years out. So they'll do another intermediate assessment before they do take any action.
And Representative Crawford, were you still interested in moving your quadrupling of the optometry fees?
No.
Yeah, we're not.
So, Mr. Chairman, based on that response from Pat, I'd move out of committee CS for Senate Bill 255, unamended with the company and fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you
for suffering through the gauntlet of labor and commerce. Tom was nervous the whole time, I saw that. Okay, the only other bill then is Senate Bill 273.
Beans. What's B and C?
You may begin, my friend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ryan McKinster. I'm staff to Senator John Cowdery. Basically, this bill is correcting a problem that was created a couple years ago. AS0866015 was changed in 2004 to deal with a perceived issue of gray market vehicles coming from Canada. It's come to our attention, and actually at the direction of that bill, the Department of Law had to review this section of law and come back with some recommendations. Did it work, or what needed to be done? Basically, the Department of Law came back and said this legislation wasn't necessarily needed. It wasn't a problem like some people had assumed it was. And secondarily, this actual change in statutory language created a problem for consumers and used and new car dealers. Basically, the problem was created when they basically put into statute the term current model. Under current law, even though it's not enforced, it is illegal to sell a current model used vehicle. Just to give you an example, a current model used vehicle would be 2000 and, I'd say, 6 right now is being currently sold. Certain models, depending on what company they are, come out half year ahead of time. But if they want to take on trade a current model vehicle, but it's used, it's been used, 2006 model, they had to have to wait for its companion model to be out before it's basically not deemed a current model vehicle anymore. This creates a problem on both ends, for the consumer and for the auto dealers. If an auto dealer basically takes a lease return, say for, we'll use for next year, for example, 2007 Silverado, and it gets returned for whatever reason, it could be poor financing or other issues. Under the current statute, they'd be required to hold on to that vehicle until the next current model comes out. This is also a problem for the consumer. I'm a serviceman, and I suddenly get sent overseas. I have a lease vehicle, which obviously it's still going to hurt me to some extent returning that vehicle back to the lot. But should I be obligated to hold on to it for the term of the lease, obviously I'll be hurt in the long run. If the current statute was enforced as it was written, the car dealer would have to hold on to that vehicle for approximately, you know, 3 to 6 months, possibly longer. Obviously, it's losing value at this time. So either the vehicle dealer loses money on the transaction, or the consumer does. It's the sponsor's contention that most likely that consumer will be kind of stuck with that car. We do have support from the used car dealers and new car dealers. There's a letter of support in your packet from Mr. John Cook. He was speaking on behalf of the Alaska Auto Dealers Association, which represents both used and new car dealers. And also there's a letter of support from Clyde Sniffen, who's an assistant attorney general from the Department of Law, and he actually specifically deals with consumer protection issues. Unfortunately, neither one of them are able to testify today online or in person. They're both actually on flights headed towards the East Coast right now. But
I didn't know Ed's name was Clyde. God, are we going to rib him now?
Yeah.
That's a monkey from every which way but loose.
Go Mr. ahead. Chairman, I just noticed that actually looking through these letters when I got these myself. But anyways, there's been testimony in other committees basically that both sides have come to agreement. This has been a process. Last year, a couple different bills dealing with this, and I believe one bill of this committee was dealing with a specific issue. And it was really the language got kind of complicated when some of the original language proposed, and so we took it back to the most simple form to address the problem. And this is actually at the recommendation of the Department of Law.
Good. So that was going to be my question. Then we'll get to Representative Ledoux. Used Car Association, basically Automobile Association, which are the new cars, like Senator Seekin's dealership, and then the Attorney General, which there was a question last year, is there parity and in concert support of this? And there is this year. I like the bill. Representative Ledoux.
Well, what I think I'm hearing is that this bill results from another bill that we did a couple of years ago, or maybe even last year, that turned out to be unnecessary and have ramifications or consequences that nobody expected. So now we're going to amend the old bill. How about just repealing the statute that goofed things up in the first place?
Representative Ledoux, actually, I'm not sure. I think there's other parts of statute that were left in. This was specifically what the Department of Law said that needs to actually clean up the law so it's enforceable.
And Representative Ledoux, that I believe that was heard through our committee 3 years ago, I want to say. It was last the 23rd legislature, but most of us were on the committee then. You had not joined the legislature yet, and I think...
So I won't take responsibility.
No, not only that, but I don't think we want to repeal everything in that, because there were some aspects of that, that going through Canada, the certification, a couple other things in the bill that I think we want to keep. I don't think repealing the whole thing would be more tenuous than just a new bill. Representative Lynn.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was the State Affairs Committee, we had quite a debate on the warranty with the Canadian vehicles. I believe Mr. Lieberger was involved in some of that. And would you please tell me again, help me understand, does that situation still exist? How does this bill fix that, or does it fix it? What happens if I were to buy one of these cars and has a, quote, Canadian warranty? Does this bill address that? And help me understand.
Representative Lynn, through the chair, this bill does not address that. This is just fixing current language that's been problematic in other areas. According to Mr. Sniffen, that problem has not been a concern when they did as required by the old bill to look into it. That hasn't been as big as a concern as they thought. Mr. Sniffen also said there's other parts of consumer protection law that kind of covers that issue, falling under advertising issues of a warranty. Is it actually a warranty? And a big issue there, I found out from this bill, which this bill doesn't deal with, is poorly selling service contracts as warranties. And that was where the problem seemed to have lie in that case. They're selling service contracts and claiming their warranties, and that actually is not addressed in this, but that is basically a false advertising issue. You're not allowed to call it a warranty unless it's a physical warranty.
And it was
from the manufacturer.
And, Ryan, wasn't it resolved in that last bill, as was the idea that you can have a used car that has 2,000 miles on it, and they were able to have it, if it was from Canada or other countries, recertify it as new? And the complaint was, wait, it's not new. I mean, it may be limited new, but, I mean, it's not, you know, in terms of use, it was used.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and that's actually going a little bit farther. There's a lot of little examples along those lines. I think that's what the old bill dealt with regarding that. But so like I said, this bill does not specifically deal with that. It just cleans up the current model vehicle language at one small part.
Representative Lynn, then Carl.
Well, part of that issue revolved around disclosure. I know just by happenstance that time, I've been looking for a car shortly before I joined the legislature, and I got involved in it, and it was not disclosed to me. But so this bill really doesn't change the status quo on the Canadian warranty thing at all. right?
Representative Lynn, it does not. It just addresses that current model issue that's basically prohibiting everybody from selling current models if they're
and
used.
And for the record, even though the Representative Lynn had difficulty, he did ultimately purchase the 1972 El Camino.
No, I did not. I went to a different dealer and purchased a car, and I'm quite happy with it.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It says Section 2 is repealed, and Section 2 is the dealer has a current sales and service agreement with the manufacturer, and the agreement requires the dealer, upon demand of the motor vehicle buyer, to perform or arrange for, within a reasonable distance of the dealer's place of business in the state, the repair and replacement work required of the manufacturer under the warranty, or the dealer offers to give the buyer a rebate to cover the repair and replacement work that the dealer cannot perform or arrange for within a reasonable distance of the dealer's place of business. Seems to me like if we did that, we'd be cutting back on consumer protection there. Give me some comfort here as to why we want to do that.
Representative Crawford, yeah, actually that was some of the problematic language from before dealing with those warranties. If they're selling a manufacturer's warranty, they are already required as part of their contract to do those things with their manufacturer's warranty. That's what the issue is. Mm-hmm. That was written in there to deal with the people that were selling a service contract as a manufacturer's warranty, but that didn't even really address the problem. Unfortunately, if you read it, basically V first, a person who does business as a dealer in the state may not offer to sell or sell a motor vehicle as a newer current model vehicle having a manufacturer's warranty unless they are unable to sell a vehicle with manufacturer's warranty unless they have that warranty. Mm-hmm. And a part of a manufacturer's warranty requires them to perform all service as a dealer. It's along with their service contract that the Ford dealer would have with Ford National. Mm-hmm. That is already dealt with, that whole process. And is according to Ed Sniffen, if I'm understanding it right, you're not allowed to sell a car with a manufacturer's warranty unless it has a manufacturer's warranty. And all those provisions of safety are already tied into that warranty. So this is redundant language that was intended to deal with service agreements that didn't actually do that.
Okay.
And actually, Representative Crawford, there's also another problem with this because I assume most of you know or probably would know if you have a current model vehicle that's used and you buy it, it still has a manufacturer's warranty with it. That warranty travels with the car. It's not dependent on where you bought it for a certain period of time. Obviously, the main things are drivetrain and some other things depending on the model of car. If this language stays in, this basically prohibits anybody but dealers from selling current model vehicles with that warranty because most current model vehicles have that warranty. So, feasibly, if I bought a new Chevy Silverado, for example, and turned it back in, only a dealer could sell it because under this current language, only a dealer who has a service agreement with the national company can sell that car because it has a manufacturer's warranty on it, even though the idea of a manufacturer's warranty is to travel with the car for a certain period of time.
Representative Cott?
Okay. I think I'm getting it. You gave an example of a military member leasing a car. Say that military member leased a car for Alaska Sales and Service in Anchorage. It's a 2006 model, this year's model. 7's not out yet. He got reassigned, so he's turning in that lease back to Alaska Sales and Service. That would not prevent Alaska Sales and Service from either leasing or selling that car then.
Through the chair, Representative Cott. Yeah, under current law, they cannot sell that current model car until a new version comes out, how the current statute is written.
But don't they have a current? Well, okay, that's what you see.
Representative Cott, to explain, yeah, that falls under the A section probably, rather than the B section. The B specifically does with the warranty information. But basically what the B does would create a situation where only manufacturers could sell current model used vehicles. It's basically creating a knockout for the dealers without giving the same ability to sell a used car, current model, to used car dealers. Because that warranty does travel with the car. So any current model vehicle, for the most part, except very extreme circumstances, has a current manufacturer's warranty on it.
Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand.
Go ahead. No, this was later.
Is that an image? invitation to something where the rest of us aren't invited to.
It was a note that says Guttenberg has tons of candy in his office after the meeting.
I do.
You really do.
And cookies. So you're all welcome to come in and have a sugar party. The previous legislation, I thought, was we did a good job, and obviously there were some holes. We wanted to make sure that anybody could sell a current year used vehicle. But I still haven't heard the answer to on the Section 2 on the repealer for Section 2 in current legislation. Why we would take away from a consumer or the owner of a vehicle when the dealer will not or cannot, for whatever reason, perform the work. Why would we say the consumer no longer has that? I mean, if I go into, you know, ABC Sales, and I had bought a car from them, and they have a legitimate service agreement and a warranty, and everything's in place, but they cannot or will not do the work for me. Then it seems like I have no recourse. I have, you know, if it's, let's say it's in Juneau, I have no place to go. Maybe I have to go to Anchorage, or maybe I have to go to Sitka, or it seems like if you're deleting this Section 2 under the current status, you're taking that away.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, actually you're not. That is already required with the manufacturer's warranty. If you are a dealer in the state, or actually a dealer in the nation, part of your service and sales agreement with the national group, say Ford for example, you are required to perform the service or pay for the service in another place. This is basically reiterating that point. But that already exists. So if you have a manufacturer's warranty, that is naturally going to exist in every place.
Okay, I understand that. But let's say you're in contesting something with the manufacturer. Or let's say, God forbid, your dealer burns down. The shop burns down. There's an accident. There's an earthquake. And you can't get it done. You have no place to go. You can't go to another. You're still looking for some, but you know, the warranty work is covered by somebody, and you're going to go. You can't go to another shop because they don't have the ability to do the warranty work. So you're simply going to be sitting there without coverage.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chairman, you still have coverage. The overall, liability for coverage would be with the national contract you have for a warranty with Ford. Whether your dealer close burned down or not, it basically on the sales and service agreement, it goes to your closest dealer. And if they can't perform it, they have to perform it in another location. Finally, the liability lies with the national Ford.
Okay. But we're taking it out of state statute. And I'm married into a Ford dealership, not the one in Fairbanks. So we have a lot of discussion on this. If something happens to the Ford dealer, and the other shop doesn't have the ability to bill with Ford, you don't get any warranty work. So the burden, and let's say they give you a bill, the burden falls largely on you to a great extent, and you don't have the ability, except as a consumer in a very broad general way, to send in a bill. Whereas if it's somebody that is a certified shop. It's simply a screen that comes up and the billing goes out and they take care of all to see it. But I see two taking away the option. And if you say it's in statute, if it's in the arrangement with the manufacturer, I see no reason to take it out of statute.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, there is a reason to take it out of statute. Currently, if this language stays as is in statute, nobody but a new car dealer would be able to sell a current model used car, which is basically you've limited consumer protection because you've narrowed the number of people that could reasonably buy back from you a current used model vehicle and to sell you that model vehicle at possibly a lower price.
And so that's right. The example. Do you want to read that in the record, the example from the automobile dealers?
I don't have that letter, so...
It just said, for example, we are a GMC dealer and are currently selling a 2007 GMC Yukon. The 2008 model won't come out until August of 2007. You know how that works. It's halfway into the year that the new model comes in for the next year. If a customer wanted to trade that vehicle in at any other new or used dealership other than the GMC dealer, they could not do so until August of 2007, when the 2008 came out, which is the current model. And so it's vernacular, and this, I guess, this loophole that's caused a problem, and that rescission or repeal of that would solve that. You know what? Ultimately, I don't think there's going to be that many of those, is there, Ryan? I mean, you probably don't have statistics, but they want to. Isn't this more of a housekeeping bill to make sure that anomaly doesn't happen, or does it happen more than not?
Mr. Chairman, actually, it does happen between. Quite a few cars, I guess, lease returns and stuff, you know, in probably tens to 20s to 30, you know, number of cars per lot get returned with that are still current model vehicles. So it is actually something that's been happening, and it's been overlooked. It's not being currently enforced, and this actually fixes that issue. If it was being currently enforced, possibly it does fall under a civil penalty. It could be up to $5,000 per violation, which would obviously be a detriment to the dealers. On, you know, obviously, the bottom line, and as most of us know, that usually gets passed on the consumer. So does hurt the consumer. But I believe Mr. Representative Guttenberg does the part he's talking about B about the warranty issue. A current model used vehicle has a manufacturer's warranty. So whether I'm a used car dealer or a new car dealer, that warranty stays with the car within certain parameters, obviously mileage, years, stuff like that. Under this, if this secondary language stays in here, this says a person who does business as a dealer in the state may not offer to sell or sell a motor vehicle as a new or current model vehicle having a manufacturer warranty unless the dealer has a current sales and service agreement with the manufacturer. Basically, you will be pushing off the market any used car dealers because none of them can possibly have a sales and service agreement.
Representative Crawford,
I understand what you just said.
They're all firing up here.
But the operative word there is or. The dealer offers to give the buyer a rebate to cover the repair and the replacement work that the dealer cannot perform or arrange for within a reasonable distance of the dealer's place of business. That seems to be like a reasonable safeguard for the person to get that warranty work done.
You know what I'd like to do? We'll bring the bill up Wednesday. Why don't you get a clarification? And I think this can be, I mean, you can ask your questions, but rather than have a lot, because I think we're going to go back and forth, and poor Ryan, I mean, he's just the guy facilitating the bill. Obviously, the used and new and every dealer association had him sponsor the bill, but I think one of them might.
Yeah, I mean, the point you're talking about is what we want to make sure happens.
Sure.
We understand that.
Okay.
I'm just concerned
about taking it out. Because we don't want this debate on the floor. You have the same fear.
My concern is taking out the two here, because I'm thinking about in the rural areas, like in Kodiak, we might not have a dealer there. So there has to be something.
Let's get clarification. I think there's a misunderstanding, but I would rather have you clarified and have them maybe write up something, and then we can, and maybe they can testify Wednesday.
And Mr. Chairman, just a point also. Yeah. This bill, this language we worked on, bill came to us from the Department of Law. This wasn't from the auto dealers.
Exactly.
They came on actually kind of dragging their feet a little bit, then finally got to a point where they could agree with on language they thought was fair to everybody.
Ed on, and that's a good. We'll get Ed on. Representative Roper.
Object. I was taking a nap. You're not going to adjourn. I had to wake up.
You know, there's no motion required.
Okay. So, Representative Cott?
Did I catch it? I might have taken a nap.
Senator Cowdery know that when your bills come to his committee.
Currently selling vehicles, yet there's no enforcement. Is that what I heard you say?
Representative Cott, through the chair, that's true.
Why is it not enforcing it? An immediate effective date. And why penalize them any further?
Why don't we have Ed answer that, too?
Representative Kyle, have Ed Sniff from the Attorney General's office answer that question for you.
That'll be good. That's good. Okay, so we'll hold the bill, and we'll bring it back Wednesday with hopefully Ed Sniff or someone from the Department of Law and anyone else to testify on the rationale for that second section and for the non-effective date immediate. And then we will adjourn at 4:12, and we thank everyone for coming.